made time in your busy schedules to come spend a few days with us here. We're on a mature and multiplied journey in CMC. And I think that this group, the overseers, are an absolutely essential part of that journey. This next year, kind of leading up to conference, our theme, our focus is going to be on the together aspect of the mature and multiply vision. What it means to be in this together, what it means to work together to live into the mature and multiply vision. And I think that starts with this group of leaders of leaders, if you will. If we get the importance of together, if we get the importance of being in this together, if we get the importance of working together to encourage and inspire and equip the pastors, the congregations, then we're going to realize more fully the joy of living into the mature and multiply vision that God has just seemed to really rally us around as a body of churches. That's my hope, my dream. I want to welcome you on behalf of Steve Swartz as well. He is the primary initiator and planner for this event. He can't be here till tomorrow noon, actually. We had a conference in Pennsylvania this week, and the kind of the pre-conference applied more to my role, so I was out for that. And then the main part of the conference applied more to his role, so we tag-teamed, and he came, and I left to come back and to be able to start this, and then he's going to join us tomorrow. He should get here around noon. Hopefully, we won't mess things up too much before then and get things too off schedule. I think we can keep going on schedule here. I want to have Darren Peachy come up. Darren is a pastor, overseer, also serves as our recalibration catalyst. I don't know if you caught that. We kind of retitled that from maybe the last time you heard revitalization, recalibration catalyst. He's going to be moderating for us these next few days. Darren, come on up. You can take it.
M&Ms. Anyway, it's good to be here. I used to think that overseers were like old people over 50, and here I am. But yeah, it's great to spend a couple days with all of you. And my wife, Karen, had promised last spring to babysit grandchildren, and that took priority. So she'd like to be here, but she's having a good time. So just for your information, because I know it's going to be hard to get you in here each session, at the beginning of each session, we're going to do a little door prize of M&Ms, since we're mature and multiply. And I thought we would start with whoever's the newest overseer. So if you've been an overseer like more than or less than like 45 days, these are yours. Great, I get to keep them. I'm good for the weekend. You got to come tomorrow morning to get yours. So Tom's going to come and lead us in some worship, and then we're going to have Phil Schwarzendruber come and share with us. So,
leading us in that way. It's a privilege to be here with you all. And when I do substitute teaching occasionally, it's really important now that the teachers share with the students what the objective for that day is, what the learning target is, what they're supposed to learn. When I go in often, they'll be on the board or somewhere, they'll be learning targets. And if the teacher's in there, they will talk to the students about what that is. So I was just going to share with you what I was told what this time is supposed to accomplish. And I was told that we are to reflect on the life and ministry of John, examine his relationship with Jesus, maybe draw some principles from the books he wrote or from his life, and find principles that are applicable in the ministry of a CMC overseer. So, you all may be able to help with that, because you may, as we talk about John and his writings and his life, you all may see some principles that I haven't, that I've missed. I will say this, it has been an awesome thing for me just to study the life of John, and a lot to learn from that. So I just trust that as we study together these next couple days, the life of John, that we will learn together what God has for us. And I will try most sessions at the end of the session to give just a couple minutes for if any of you have something that struck you while we were talking, while you were thinking, give you a chance to share that with us. And I told Darren, I said, if we get started doing that and we start getting over the time we're supposed to have, just shut us down. So I'll look for him to do that. This evening, I'd like to think a little bit about John and who he was, and maybe a few things about John may help us a little bit to understand sort of his role in the life of Christ and the life of the church. John was, as I understand it, one of the group of four that were the first ones called to be apostles, to be disciples of Jesus. There were two sets of brothers, right? James and John, Andrew and Peter. And, of course, Jesus wanting to make sure that this theology would go out to everybody, chose some really highly educated, deep thinkers, right? Well, a little bit later, Peter and John were described as unlearned and ignorant. It sort of means uneducated. But it's interesting to me that Jesus didn't necessarily choose the most highly qualified as the world would look at it. John being one of them. He refers to himself in the Gospel of John as the disciple whom Jesus loved. I don't think he ever, in his writing, ever names himself John. Now, in Revelation, at one point he said, I, John. But in the Gospel, he refers to himself as the disciple who Jesus loved. He was part of what is often referred to as the inner circle of disciples. There were three, as you know, Peter, James, and John, who became that inner circle. Now, there were several times when Jesus just took those three with him. Name me a couple of those times. Who knows right off? Where?
Transfiguration.
Mount Transfiguration. He took Peter, James, and John with him, and they saw Jesus transfigured. He became dazzling white. And when they were coming back down, he told them not to talk about it, you know, until a little later. Okay, and another one. Anybody know another one? On the last night, when they went to pray there in the Garden of Gethsemane, he took the disciples so far, and he said, now wait here while I go and pray. And then he took Peter, James, and John with him. Of course, they had a little trouble sleep that, at least some of them did that night. But anyway, yeah, that's another time. And there's at least one more time.
Yeah,
Jairus' daughter, when he actually raised her from the dead.
Yes. Raising from the dead.
Yes, that he took just the three with him. And I don't know, that's the only three that I found, the only three times when he just took those three with him. Now, Are any of these, let me ask this. Is there any mention of just those three or the inner circle in the Gospel of John? I didn't find it anywhere in the Gospel of John, which I found kind of interesting that he did not talk about that. Those accounts are all in the other Gospels. And I kind of asked myself as I was studying this, you know, you would think that maybe he would have talked about that some because, you know, that was kind of a special thing to be able to go and see and do some things that the others didn't do. But I don't find anywhere in the Gospel of John that he talks about just those three. And I don't know if I know why. He doesn't say why. But if you want to turn to a scripture, the one scripture I want to read tonight, kind of the thought for tonight, out of John chapter 20. And in John 20, the sort of the end of his writing, John 20 verse 30, is really the purpose for John's writing. Verse 30 says, Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. In fact, a little bit later, in the next chapter, he said the whole world wouldn't contain the books if we wrote everything that could be written. So he said, I'm kind of paraphrasing, you know, I've carefully chosen what I'm writing. These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name. That's John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31. John wrote with the purpose of people believing in Jesus and then by believing, finding life in Him. And we'll talk maybe at one of the other sessions. This theme of life just goes throughout the writings of John. Just over and over, he talks about having life. These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name. Would it have served that purpose for him to talk a lot about, hey, you know, I'm the inner circle. Just three of us. We got all this time of being with Jesus. You see, for John, it was not about himself. It was about pointing people to Jesus, and he determined that, at least in this case, it would be better served not to talk about those things. Now, a little bit about the inner circle, though, about these three. Simon, named Peter. Peter means what? Rock. How did Peter do during those 3 years with Jesus as being the rock? He'd kind of fly off and say things that maybe at times would have been better not said. Obviously, at the time of the denial of Jesus. And I think that may bring up a principle for us as overseers. Don't always judge that new pastor or that person in ministry by the first glance. Somehow we have to learn to see the potential in people. And I think Jesus saw potential in Peter when he named him Peter the Rock. I think he saw what could happen after the power of the resurrection became part of his life and became his power. Because certainly in the early church, Peter became that rock that Jesus had named him. But he wasn't so much that early on. And then James and John, I think about them. What was their nickname?
Boanerges.
Which is?
Sons of Thunder.
Sons of Thunder. Wow. Sons of Thunder. I mean, I believe that's the one I'm going to get to take care of my mother when I die. That's somehow Jesus saw some potential there in those sons of thunder. It's interesting, the three there, James was the first of the apostles to die, I believe, other than, of course, Judas who left. But James ministered for about 14 years and died in AD 44 at the hands of Herod. Peter, who I think was the oldest apostle, or at least from my study, that's what I get, and he ministered for about 30 years, died in the mid-60s sometime. But then John, who was the youngest apostle, stayed around the longest, died around the end of the turn of the century, ministered for about 70 years. And it seems, as I look at it, it seems that John was probably the one that was the closest to Jesus during his ministry here on earth. Which, you know, I think about maybe another principle that we could glean from this is the importance of investing in a few people and then sending them out. You know, Jesus did that. He had the 12, that came the 11, but he had the 12, but then he chose three that I think he invested a little extra energy in, and maybe even one, maybe John a little bit more. You know, John was with Jesus, you know, all the way through to his crucifixion. He heard, as I understand it, he heard all those words from the cross. You know, so John seemed to be the one throughout that was the closest to Jesus. he was with Jesus through his death, and I think probably was the first to believe the resurrection. You know, at the time of Jesus' death, they had read and he had talked about, but they didn't really understand the resurrection that well. And so you remember when Peter and John went running to the grave? John got there first. But Peter went there, he just kind of blundered right on into the grave and looked a little bit. And it says, then John came in after him. And it says, John saw and believed. I think that's, if you back up to earlier in chapter 20 there, verse 8, finally the other disciple who had reached the tomb first also went in. He saw and believed. And then the parentheses say they did not, still did not understand the scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. So it seems like John was the first to recognize that Jesus had indeed risen. So, that's kind of the thoughts for this evening. So maybe a couple of takeaways for us as overseers is, you know, look for the potential in people. Don't write them off right away. In our church, probably the guy that has brought more people to our church in the last couple years would be the last person you would think as the evangelist out there. I mean, he is dyslexic, can't hardly read. He's the kind that may stop by to talk to me, and 3 hours later, if I'm available, he's still there talking because he likes to talk. You know, it's kind of a challenge. And yet I look at what he's doing. I mean, he just invites people to come to church, you know, come to church, and a number of people have come. You know, so he's probably not the one I would have chosen. I don't know, but God uses people. The other one is just, you know, find some people to invest in. Okay, that's enough for me to say tonight. So just in a couple of minutes, I know some of you probably when you saw this topic looking over John's shoulder, you probably thought, wow, I could have taught that. So what's a couple of thoughts real quickly as far as what inspires you when you think about John or what challenges you when you think about John? Anybody want to just share something off the top of your head?
Why do you think he referred to himself as the disciple Jesus loved? Was that somehow negative of that? Yeah. I'm trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Well, to footnote that in a little different direction, one of the themes in John, which is very powerful in the gospel and in the letters, is the theme of love.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't just a disciple whom Jesus loved, but he's the disciple who focused on love as the key to, as the key sign of discipleship. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the story is told when John died in Ephesus, you know, many, many years after 70 years of ministry. And so there were a lot of people really interested in John in those years in the church because he's the last apostle.
Mm-hmm.
So you had many younger disciples gathering around him. So the story is told of how they gathered around him just before he died, and they were eagerly listening for what his last words would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very simple. Brothers, love each other. And then he died.
Hmm.
And that theme is there throughout John. So it's related to what Tom is saying as well. But it's one of the themes that stands on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's just giving us permission. Like, how many times do we just, when we're driving here today, like, Jesus, thank you for loving me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many times do we do that?
Yeah.
Like, maybe John's just giving us permission to say, yeah, Jesus, thanks for loving me.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, do any of the other Gospels say that John was the one Jesus loved? Or is it only a self-designation, like, I'm the one Jesus loved? Or do the other...
I don't think they do.
Is he the one that Jesus leaned on at the Last Supper?
Yeah, he was sitting next to Jesus, and so was it Peter that said John asked Jesus who it is?
So, in that sense,
so they recognized him being close, but I don't get the sense, like throughout the book of Acts, when you read about John, don't get any sense of him trying to lift himself up. Although, you know, him and James kind of wanted those place of authority, right? I mean, there was a little bit of that desire to be up there early on. But it seems like that after the resurrection of Jesus, that changed and they recognized it's all about Jesus. That's... Okay, if anybody gets any good inspiration on that question anymore, maybe another time we're together when we talk about it. But, thanks.
Tom and Phil, that's helpful. Appreciate that. So Brian's going to come and share with us about the role of an overseer. And I know you guys all know Brian, but I've worked a lot closer with Brian here over the last year, and I just... really come to appreciate him as a good brother, and he has a passion for the church and a passion for maturing and multiplying, and he's willing to take some risk, I think, and maybe he doesn't, but anyway, I've really come to appreciate Brian, and since Tom admitted that he hasn't read what an overseer is supposed to do, it seems like this would be a pertinent discussion to have, Brian. So come remind us of what an overseer is supposed to do.
Alrighty. Darren, while you're up, you're still up. Okay. Would you mind passing these out to so everybody can have one that should be plenty?
You got to be here at the beginning of the session.
Come
told this story before, and I apologize if it was in a setting where you were at and it's a repeat, but I think it's important for kind of how I want to frame what we're talking about. John Nisley, who passed away, was my first overseer. He's was pastor in Tallahassee, and I was pastoring in Florida at Trinity Chapel at the time. And several years in, so I started, it was in my 20s, I was young, I didn't know anything, still don't know much, but hopefully a little more than I did in my 20s, but associate pastor for a year, then administrative pastor, and then when Fran Overholt retired, I stepped into the lead pastor role and was you know, new, not a lot of experience, but had a lot of excitement and energy for a while until you get beat down a couple times. You probably know what that's like. Well, this was several years in, and there was a woman in the church who we had been working with, and some good things and some kind of, it was kind of one of these discipleship relationships with my wife and I. And there came a point where I felt really strongly like I needed to kind of go from encourager to bring some real correction and kind of some strong word to her. And I did, and that did not go over very well at all. And it was a rough patch. And then I got the letter. Any of you ever got the letter? Probably some of you have got the letter before. I got the letter telling me how miserably I was doing as a pastor, how much I had failed her, and much more. I didn't keep, some people keep those letters. I did not keep that letter. I did not keep that letter. But man, I was down. And I went home, I'm like, I'm done. This is not what I signed up for. I signed up to be in ministry to change the world, not to deal with people. So I called my overseer and told him that. I said, I'm done. This, somebody else can do this. John Nisley on the other end says, Brian, just wait. Don't do anything yet. Edith and I are going to jump in the car. We're going to come down there and talk to you in Charlotte. This is like, Tallahassee was, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours from us, and they did exactly that. They jumped in their car, drove to our house, stayed overnight with us, spent the next day with us. Basically talked me off the ledge is kind of what he did. Then brought the leadership team together, and we had a good talk. And I'll never forget that. And many times since, I've thought, man, how would my life be different if I didn't have John Nisley as an overseer? It's an important relationship. And you serve in those roles in many ways, too. Now, the flip side of that is I learned what it meant to be an overseer from John Nisley. CMC has not been very intentional about, we've not done it at all as far as training. Or how many of you, when you agreed to be an overseer, you went to an orientation for CMC overseers, you had some training and some really good input? My training and orientation to overseeing was what I saw in John Nisley and what I saw in him before I became a pastor with the previous pastor at Trinity Chapel, and in my life was vital, important, but it was basically crisis management. When we got in trouble, when something got messed up, John Nisley came, smoothed things over, got us going again. And so, honestly, that was when I first was asked to be overseer. That's kind of how I viewed the overseer role. I can help if there's trouble. Tonight, we're going to try to get a little more intentional about talking about more of the scope of overseeing work and how it can be a blessing and a ministry, a much needed ministry in CMC. But I'm going to admit right up front that I would give myself a pretty poor grade on the churches that I oversee, because I think I'm still kind of in that mode of just, okay, if there's a crisis, I can step in. So we're going to learn from you, from each other, rather than just me telling you what an overseer should be. You know, we have documents in CMC. Tom referred to that. We're going to refer to that tonight. And the paper that I passed out, we're starting to tweak some of the language and get a little bit more intentional about communicating. And what I've found is that churches who have been in CMC a long time, they're not asking questions about what an overseer does, because they have the same thing. They've done it. It's been modeled, and so they do the same thing. And it's probably the case for you. And I know most of you, if not all of you, are much smarter than me, and no matter who you had as an overseer when you first pastored, you figured out how to be a great overseer. But for me, at least, it was, you know, I need some of this input and to learn more about how to serve effectively. Anyway, we're trying to become more intentional, and what I've discovered is that newer churches to CMC, the new ones coming in, or churches that are just starting out, tend to ask a lot more questions about overseer. What is that? Because we always talk to them. That's one of the things we talk about when they start asking questions about CMC, when they apply to be a part of CMC. We talk to them about getting an overseer. Well, what's that? And these the Q&A there are three, probably the most common three questions that I get from churches when we start talking about an overseer. The first one is, does having an overseer add another tier of authority to our church? What is this? Is this a bishop that comes in and tells us what to do? And it depends where the church is coming from and what their background has been. But that's a question, and we've never viewed it that way in CMC. The overseer has been an advisor. He's not a voting member. He doesn't have the ability to just drop the hammer and say, this is what needs to happen here in this congregation. Another question, will this cost a lot? Is this person on staff? Do we have to put him in our budget? And there again, that's kind of all over the map for us in CMC. For some, it's just, you know, travel expenses if they're coming from another state or something, another community. We typically ask churches at least cover their travel expenses, and then beyond that, work with them and see if you can come to something that works. And one more question that comes up a lot is, so what does this overseer do? Is this just someone that people in my church can go around me and complain to when they have a problem with me? And we want to be really careful that that's not happening, where the overseer just becomes the guy to collect all the negative stuff from the congregation about the pastor. We want to make sure that the overseer is working closely with the pastor. There's also a couple of things we share when churches, because again, churches that are coming in, they don't know a whole lot of people, so they're asking for suggestions for overseer, or who should we get. So there's some things, just for your information, you can keep this sheet. This is some of the things we talk about. Relatability, and this is actually quite a selling point for CMC, for churches especially that are coming out of a background of having just a regional person assigned to them, like a district minister who they may or may not get along with, but that's just who their person is. And they hear in CMC, oh, the church selects an overseer that meshes well with them. So I think it's a positive thing for us. So we talk about that relatability. Does the person relate well with the pastor, the leadership team, and the congregation? Shared vision is another question. It's that we feel is important. Does this overseer, you know, is their vision of church life similar enough to be effective in the congregation, or is it just going to be like kind of button heads, where you have a overseer whose vision is this and the congregation is this? Proximity, and that, you know, we're spread all over the place in CMC, so you know some of you are, I'm sure, overseeing churches that are far away in other states. But how is the church going to be able to handle that? Can they afford to bring the overseer, pay the overseer's way? Is there capabilities of meeting via conference call or video conference? How many of you have used like Zoom or some kind of video conferencing with the churches that you oversee? Yeah, it's a great tool. I'm starting to wonder how I ever did without it, but it's just a really good way to be able to. It's still nothing beats face-to-face, but that's one way. Age and the stage of life of the pastor. You know, is the church that's looking for an overseer, is their pastor set to retire in 5 years or so? Then we want an overseer. We don't want an overseer at the same stage that's going to bail out on them in 5 years. We want a younger one who will be able to kind of walk with them through any leadership transitions. I'm not going to take time to, if you have questions just about this, the process of or procedure of selecting an overseer or overseer terms, that's something that's there that we can talk about. But what I really want to get to tonight is on this the sample overseer job description. And I want to talk about those five things under the purpose. Okay, actually, let me read the first one. It's kind of... Maybe is almost word for word. It's not. I know that has changed some too from what Tom read. But the assignment of overseers for a specified term not exceeding 5 years, but with a possibility of successive terms. The overseer's service should be reviewed periodically at the initiative of the senior pastor or the appointing board or committee with appropriate congregational involvement. The overseer is accountable to the CMC Executive Board in regard to his ministerial credentials and his qualifications to serve as overseer. He relates with sensitivity to the needs and expectations of the congregation he serves, with his tenure of assignment and reappointment being subject to congregational decision. And of course, probably you have different, like in some of the congregations you serve, it might just be a leadership team decision. Sometimes maybe the whole congregation votes on it. But here's the purpose. The provision of overseers for the purpose of serving as pastor to the pastor, assisting the leadership of the congregation in giving vision to its life and ministry, giving counsel in times of difficulty and distress within the congregation, providing stability in times of leadership transition, and serving as a link between the congregation and CMC. So what I want us to do, what I want you to do here is we're going to divide up into groups. Maybe the two of you, I think we'll just have three groups. Could the two of you come over? Let's do like six. Maybe the two of you come over and make a six here with these four. And then that leaves eight. That's fine. So you eight be in a group. And actually move your chairs. We'll just kind of, if you want to, there's enough extra spaces. You can kind of get around the table if you want. But go ahead and move to those positions once. We're going to